Ramayana Balakanda, Part 2. The great tract of land known as Kosala extended along the banks of the Sarayu River. This land was verdant, prosperous, and rich in grain. And within this vast territory was the renowned city of Ayodhya, built by the desire of Vaivasvata Manu, the ruler of mankind. This glorious city was 96 miles long and 24 miles wide. It was well laid out with its beautiful straight roads, perfumed with scented water, sprayed from the trunks of intoxicated elephants. Every day, damsels of the celestial planets hovered above the city in their beautiful airplanes, showering it with flowers. The arch gateways of Ayodhya were made of marble, and the gates were wrought with gold and silver, embedded with precious jewels. Cannons and catapults, capable of repulsing any enemy, protected the city walls. The marketplaces were well planned, and seven-storied houses symmetrically lined the streets. Adorned with multi-storied palaces and surrounded with exquisite gardens, Ayodhya resounded with the vibrations of musical instruments, rivaling Amaravati, the abode of the heavenly king Indra. And throughout the city, bards and singers recited the glories of God, while dancers acted out the Lord's pastimes for everyone's benefit. And within Ayodhya were many beautiful gardens, abounding with flowers shaded by fruit trees. Blue, red, and golden lotus flowers filled the ponds, and fountains shot water high into the air. Gentle breezes carried the aromatic spray from the fountains, thus cooling the citizens by their touch, and making even a hot summer day seem like spring. Sounds of cranes and peacocks could be heard everywhere, and the water flowing through Ayodhya's streams and rivulets tasted as sweet as sugarcane sap, and it was used not only for drinking, but for irrigating numerous mango orchards. Many houses and palaces, perfectly designed, were built of precious stones and decorated with flags and festoons. Their beauty rivaled the palaces of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha. Thousands of warriors protected that great city, skilled archers well versed in the use of weapons, and chariot fighters who were able to fight with thousands of men at a time. The streets leading into Ayodhya were always filled with travelers. Kings and princes from all parts of the world came to render their annual tribute and pay respects to the king of Ayodhya. Traders from near and far flocked to the markets to barter. Brahmana priests could often be seen pouring ghee into the sacrificial fires, chanting their Vedic hymns, and proclaiming the glories of Lord Vishnu. Having mastered their senses and having devoted themselves to truth, these Brahmanas were blessed with all good qualities. Maharaj Dasharatha was the emperor of the entire world, and he was a great Raja Rishi, considered almost on the level of a Maharishi. He was a most formidable warrior, capable of fighting alone with an unlimited number of opponents. Because he and the citizens were completely pious, Ayodhya was the picture of perfect Vedic civilization. Every imaginable opulence was exhibited in perfection, and material miseries coming from the results of sinful life were practically non-existent. In Ayodhya, the four social orders, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, participated cooperatively for the peace and prosperity of the kingdom. No one cheated and no one was miserly. Arrogance, atheism, and harsh behavior and speech were conspicuous by their absence. Even though Maharaj Dasharatha possessed such fantastic opulence and prestige, he remained unhappy. Try as he may, the king was unable to beget a son in order to continue his dynasty. Finally, after much deliberation, King Dasharatha decided to perform a horse sacrifice for the purpose of getting a son. With this in mind, Dasharatha sent his chief minister, Sumantra, to call for his family priests. And when the Brahmanas, headed by Vasishta and Vamadeva, assembled, Maharaj Dasharatha addressed them, "O best among the twice born, for many years I have ardently desired to beget a son. However, all my efforts have been in vain. Because I am without an heir, I can no longer feign happiness. Indeed, my days seem wasted and are filled with grief." Thus, after much careful consideration, and with your kind permission, I have decided to perform a horse sacrifice. Because you are fully knowledgeable in scripture, I am confident that you will be able to lead me on the proper path. All the priests unanimously approved of Maharaj Dasharatha's idea to perform the horse sacrifice. And thereafter the king ordered his ministers to make all necessary arrangements without delay. Sumantra then took Maharaj Dasharatha aside to narrate the following story that he had formerly heard from the great Sanat Kumar, who had spoken it in an assembly of great sages. "O my Lord, you will be very interested to hear this story, because it predicts that in the future you will become the father of four glorious sons." It so happened that Sanat Kumar previously related this same story in Satya Yuga of the previous millennium, and thus none of the events which were described by him had yet occurred, but were all destined to take place in the far distant future. Due to some offense on the part of King Romapad, there once came to be an extremely severe drought within his kingdom, causing great fear among all the living beings. And when the conditions became intolerable, Maharaj Romapad summoned his council of learned Brahmins, inquiring from them the cause of the drought. "I know that it is because of some fault of mine that this terrible drought has now overcome my kingdom. O best of the twice born, because your knowledge is boundless, please prescribe the proper atonement for my past sins." "O King Romapad, there is a great Brahmana sage named Mrigirisha who is residing in the forest. This Mrigi is the son of Kashyapa, and his son is named Rishyastringa. If you can bring this Rishi's son to your kingdom and give him your daughter Shanta in marriage, the drought will immediately end." Shanta was actually the daughter of Maharaj Dasharatha, but she had been given to King Romapad on account that he was childless, and he asked Dasharatha for the daughter. King Romapad was very glad to learn the means for ending the drought. But when he requested his priest to summon Rishyasringa, they refused. O King, we fear that Mrigi Rishi will curse us if we try to lure his son away from home. Rishyasringa has been brought up by his father in complete isolation. Why, he has never even seen another human being. And because Rishyasringa has never even once beheld a member of the fair sex, he is completely unaware of the pleasure of their association. My dear King, since we desire your welfare, we have devised a method for bringing Rishyasringa to your kingdom. You should have the most beautiful of courtesans go there and allure him with their feminine charms. We are certain that by this means your aim will easily be accomplished. Maharaj Romapada thus agreed to their plan and then sent for the foremost of young and beautiful prostitutes. After being thus instructed by the king and promised sufficient rewards, the girls departed for the forest, determined to bring back the young rishi at all costs. Thereafter, the prostitutes set up their camp at the ashram of Mrigi Rishi and waited for the opportune time. It so happened that one day Rishyasringa wandered away from home and came to the camp of the prostitutes. Seeing him, the girls jubilantly approached Rishyasringa. When they asked about his identity, the boy replied, "I am the son of Mrigi Rishi, and I am engaged in performing austerities nearby at my father's ashram. Oh, how wonderfully beautiful all of you are to look at. I wish that you would come to my home and accept my worship and hospitality." The prostitutes thus went with Rishyasringa, where they were very nicely received at his ashram with offerings of water to drink, water for washing their feet, and various kinds of fruits and roots. However, the girls were extremely afraid of the father's imminent return and did not wish to stay too long. As the prostitutes were leaving, they said, "My dear friend, our customs for receiving guests are quite different from yours. Now, please accept our offerings of honor and respect in return." Upon saying this, the girls embraced Rishyasringa tightly with great affection, and then they fed him sumptuous sweets. Never before had the Rishi's innocent son tasted anything so pleasing, for he had been accustomed to eating only fruits and roots. Indeed, he thought that the sweets were a type of wonderful fruit. Moreover, since he had previously seen only his father, he took the prostitutes to be enchantingly beautiful men. After the girls departed, Rishyasringa began to experience feelings of unease and restlessness within his heart. The seed of lusty desire, which had remained dormant within his heart, had now sprouted. Rishyasringa began to constantly think of the beautiful woman. Rishyasringa could hardly sleep that night. His mind and heart had become overwhelmed by the thoughts of their sweet speech and tender embraces. Unable to think of anything else, the following day, Rishyasringa went to the camp of the prostitutes. The girls received Rishyasringa with great delight and then explained, "Oh, this is not our real home. Please come board our magnificent floating hermitage and accompany us to a place where we will all be able to entertain you in a much better fashion. We have many nice varieties of fruit and roots, and we shall pass the time so enjoyably that you will hardly be able to perceive how time is passing. Being captivated within his heart, Rishyasringa unhesitatingly accompanied the prostitutes. Thus, the women allured him back to the capital of Romapad within the kingdom of Anga. Indeed, even as Rishyasringa was being carried down the Ganga, Indra began to send forth showers of rain, giving joy to all living creatures. As soon as he understood that Rishyasringa had arrived, King Romapad came out of his palace and bowed down before the young Rishi. Then, after worshipping Rishyasringa with great attention, Romapad escorted him into the inner apartments of his palace, where he presented his daughter to the Rishi in charity. When he could understand that Rishyasringa was fully satisfied, Maharaj Romapada begged from him the benediction that neither he nor his father would show their wrath towards him because of the duplicitous manner in which he had allured Rishyasringa away from his home. Rishyasringa gave the king his assurance, and thereafter the marriage between him and Shanta was celebrated with great festivity. After the wedding, the newly married couple continued to live in the palace of Maharaj Romapada and thus passed their days happily in royal comfort. Sumantra concluded his narration to Maharaj Dasharatha. O King, Sanat Kumar predicted that you would take help from your friend Romapada by requesting him to allow Rishyasringa to come to the kingdom of Kosala and perform the horse sacrifice. And it was further indicated that after the performance of the horse sacrifice, you would gain the fulfillment of your desires by receiving 4 incomparable sons. Maharaj Dasharatha was most pleased to hear the story from Sumantra. Without delay, he went with his retinue to the kingdom of Anga. There he was received by Maharaj Romapad with great respect. And at that time, the king of Anga informed Rishyasringa that Dasharatha was his real father-in-law. After enjoying Romapad's hospitality for about 1 week, Maharaj Dasharatha addressed his friend as follows: "For a long time, I have been morose on account of not having a son to perpetuate my illustrious dynasty. Now I beg you to allow Rishyasringa to come to Ayodhya and perform a horse sacrifice on my behalf." Romapada happily agreed, and Maharaj Dasharatha soon returned to his capital with Rishyasringa and Shanta. Then, when spring arrived, Maharaj Dasharatha humbly approached Rishyasringa, begging him for instructions regarding the performance of the horse sacrifice. Thus, preparations for the sacrifice commenced, and the site was selected on the northern bank of the river Sarayu. At that time, the system was for an emperor to send a challenge horse all over the world in order to establish his supremacy over all subordinate kings. The horse would be accompanied by soldiers of the emperor, and upon its arrival in a kingdom, the local king would either have to offer tribute to the emperor's representatives or fight to capture the horse. Any ruling prince or king was at liberty either to express his tacit willingness to obey the emperor or to accept the challenge and thus disobey the supremacy of the particular emperor. One who accepted the challenge had to thus fight with the emperor's men and establish his own supremacy by victory. The defeated challenger would have to sacrifice his life, making place for another king or ruler. Only when the horse returned, after touring the world with no more challengers left, could a horse sacrifice begin. Understanding that King Janaka would be the future father-in-law of his sons, Maharaj Dasarath sent him the first invitation. And likewise, other subordinate kings were requested to attend the horse sacrifice. After one full year, the challenge horse returned to Ayodhya, having wandered over the earth under the protection of 400 princes. Only now could the sacrifice begin.